back here at A Closer Look. I'm Pam Atherton, and Keith Bissett from the 9th Judicial District Attorney's Office, he's the senior investigator there, is in studio with us. He used to be with the Clovis Police Department, took a year off to go over to Iraq to train the police department there, and he's back now with the District Attorney's Office, and we're talking a little bit about his time over in Iraq. What was the biggest difference to you when you got there? What was the big thing that you went, wow, I never would have thought this?
When I first landed, it was the heat.
Really?
It was absolutely stifling, you know, and I've been here in New Mexico now for, I think it's going on 11 years, coming up on 12, actually, and we have some hot weather here, but when we got off the C-130 and I hit the runway, I thought, oh my goodness, I just couldn't believe the heat.
What month did you get there?
I landed in Baghdad July 9th.
Oh, so right in the middle of it.
Absolutely.
And when you think of our military men and women over there and all the stuff they have to wear all the time.
I feel sorry for them. I mean, they're sweating constantly.
Yeah. So the heat was number one. What about the atmosphere at the time? Did that seem to surprise you? Or
it wasn't much different than what you would expect. It was kind of drab and a desert atmosphere. And it was just what was weird were the people, the looks that you'd get. You'd get some very nice looks. You'd get some hatred looks. The buildings were just totally different. The architecture is just totally different from here. The way the streets are, the way the people drive, it was just, it's America turned around. It's just totally different.
Yeah, people dress differently.
Oh, absolutely. You'd see women anywhere from Western fashions to the full burqas, and all you'd see is their eyes.
Yeah.
So you had, you know, from there and everything in between, and the men... It was a running joke over there, but we always said we were going to open up a shirt store over there selling striped shirts, because that's all you saw. The men just wore striped dress shirts. That was it.
Really? All the time?
Absolutely.
Did you always feel like an outsider?
Yes. Yeah, I think that you know your place over there. You're welcome to an extent because you're helping them, but you're also kind of shunned as far as they're not going to let you know everything that goes on.
Yeah. Was the town destroyed as much as you expected or not as much as you had heard?
I was actually surprised at how many buildings were still standing. I was stationed in Baghdad the whole time I was there, and I saw some destroyed buildings, like at the police station where I was at, Al-Qarata. That's the headquarters of the old secret police that were there, and there were some buildings that were destroyed there, naturally, during the war. But then other places, you know, when we would drive around, I was surprised that they stayed intact. And there were some beautiful buildings over there.
Yeah. How much did you worry for your own safety?
Oh, I worried every single day. It was a constant thought in my head. I'd call back to my wife every day, and she'd always tell me to be safe. And it was just a constant thought. It was something that you just got used to, listening to the gunfire outside or listening to the bombs off in the distance or... It really got intensified after the bombing on March 9th, but
now,
I knew...
Yeah, we need to talk a little bit about that, because you actually did have a firsthand experience of some bombing that came awfully darn close to you.
Oh, absolutely. That was the morning of March 9th. I had actually left here March the 5th, I think it was. I got back into Baghdad on March the 6th, and my sleep schedule was still kind of messed up. So I was getting up probably around 5:30 every morning, getting ready to go to work. And then I'd get up and I'd get on the internet and check my emails and stuff. Well, when I did that, it was about, I think it was between 6:15 and 6:30 in the morning. I heard a lot of gunfire coming from our roof. You'd hear some gunfire every once in a while, but it just wasn't normal to hear this amount.
And from your roof? I mean, this was typical?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You'd hear, you know, a round or two every once in a while, or, you know, you'd hear them rip off a magazine, and then it would stop.
Yeah. It's kind of like the noisy neighbors upstairs. The stereo's too loud. Knock it off.
Yeah, absolutely.
Only it's a couple of magazines.
Absolutely.
Okay.
But this wouldn't stop. Yeah. So you knew something was going on. And I remember getting up off my bed, and I kind of peeked out the window from around the wall, and I see one of our guards, Iraqi guards, in the parking lot. And he's ducking down by one of our cars. And I thought, that's not good.
Yeah.
You just don't get the good feeling. You know, everything, all the senses start going off. So I go back around in my bed, and I lay on my bed. I log off the computer. I set the computer down. As soon as I closed the screen to the computer, I saw a bright flash of light, and I got thrown against the wall. And then I just remember thinking, oh, my gosh, what just happened?
Yeah.
I get up, there's, you know, stuff just all over me, and I look and my room's just destroyed. Everything's just blown off the shelves.
What floor are you on?
I was on the fourth floor.
And did it actually tear a hole in your room?
Oh, it blew out the window frame, and then probably on all around the window, about a 2-foot section of plaster from around it.
And where did the shell or whatever it was land?
What it was actually was it was a garbage truck filled with explosives.
Uh-huh.
And they had driven through the Ministry of Agriculture parking lot, which was right next to us. And they tried to ram our barrier, but they were unable to get through our barrier, so they detonated it right there. And it was approximately 40 yards from my room.
So it was just things flying up.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Big artillery shells that all went off at the same time, so it was just an extreme explosion.
And did other people die in this explosion?
We, as a company, lost zero people.
Wow.
Which was absolutely incredible. I think, if I'm not mistaken, there was either one, maybe two Iraqis that were killed. But that was it. And why, we don't know. We were just extremely lucky. I mean, it blew the doors off. We had zero doors. The biggest piece of the door that I could find was probably 1 foot by 1 foot.
Wow.
And that was it.
Did it change how you felt at that point in time?
Oh, it scared me to death.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, it really sends it home. And then we had the assistant U.S. ambassador come to our hotel and talk like 2 weeks later, and he's telling us it's bigger than the bomb that went off in Beirut. It's the largest explosion that's happened in Iraq since the end of the war. And you just start thinking, you know, that you just lived through that. And it's just absolutely incredible. And every time you start hearing gunfire, you know, my heart would start racing a little more than usual. And
so you had a little bit more of a stress factor after that happened. You already were on alert. But now, every time you heard gunfire, your body was like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, oh, yeah, you're really peaked then. Or you hear a car bomb in the distance and you can feel your heart start fluttering even faster. And then you'll slow down. And yeah, Your senses are extremely heightened then. I mean, you're heightened anyways, but then after that instance, I felt that my senses were extremely heightened.
Because it was now more realistic
Absolutely.
That something could happen. You know, and probably it was somebody who was a suicide bomber who figured they were going to perish in that.
There was a driver of the truck, and then there was a guy on the back of the truck with an AK-47 shooting.
So what is your understanding of suicide bombers? Because we don't in the United States comprehend it. In Japan, obviously, kamikaze was not an unusual thought process. Suicide bombers, if you want to call them that, and overseas. What's the mindset? Why don't you know?
Well, you have some voluntary and some involuntary. You know, some of the families are being kidnapped over there, and you will go do this or your family will be harmed. So they go off and they do what they think is their mission for their family and drive a truck or a car or whatever they have to drive into an area. It's detonated and the family's let go. And then you just have the voluntary ones where it's just a mindset that I can't comprehend.
Is it a zealousness of a belief in their thing that it doesn't matter? They're willing to do whatever it takes to help their cause?
Absolutely. I think that it's mostly that. And then you throw in probably a little bit of hardcore brainwashing going on and they just go and do it. For what reason, I don't know, and I'll probably never understand.
But it certainly makes it more dangerous when you have people who have nothing to lose.
Absolutely. They have nothing to lose.
Yeah. All right. We're talking with Keith Bissett, who is the senior investigator at the 9th Judicial District Attorney's Office and who spent some time over in Iraq training the police over there. We've got some more to talk about, like what it was like to come back to America. That and we'll talk about the District Attorney's Office as well. I'm Pam Atherton. Thanks for being with us. We've got more to come. Keep it here.